Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Royal Watcher podcast. Today, Sam and I are going to discuss a really special exhibition that I had the pleasure of attending earlier this week in Abu Dhabi. Cartier has hosted, held this exhibition in different forms for the past 2 years. They start off in Paris, then they took it to Dallas, and they had a couple different jewels there, and I was lucky enough to see that. And then last week, when I sat down to write about this exhibition, I decided might as well go check it out in Abu Dhabi. And well, I'll be straight up honest with you, just because of the Gloucester and DITR. Otherwise, I probably would just cover it online.
The life you lead said, oh, I'll just pop to Abu Dhabi one day.
One day, no. I've been very lucky that I get to do this work. And it was very much a pinch me move. I was like, maybe I can go. So, no, it was, I think, definitely worth it. So, the Cartier Islamic Art Inspiration and Modern Design Exhibition is at the Louvre Abu Dhabi from November till the 24th of March. So hopefully this episode is out before then. And if anyone sees it, they have the chance to go check it out. But I was very impressed overall because I have seen the earlier iteration of this exhibition by the same curator. So there were similarities, but there were quite a lot of differences as well. And it's really a journey that the whole exhibition takes you from how Cartier was basically doing a very specific style, and then how they got inspired by Islamic art and objects and different kind of clients to create such unique jewels that are so emblematic of Cartier's style in this day and age.
Yes, and so Cartier sort of started out as, you know, a Parisian jeweler, and for many years they catered to mainly Russian clients before the Russian Revolution. When did they start dabbling in Islamic arts?
So if we move on to the next slide, we'll see basically the very, this is basically the exhibition over here. So this was a brief overview of everything, but in the next slide after this one is where I kind of want to start with. This is the style that Cartier was doing in the late 1800s, right before the turn of the century. And this was very much inspired by the ornate kind of cast iron railings and the, basically the buildings around Paris and the stuff they saw. So they got very inspired by the industrial architecture and decided to convert it into jewelry, which seems so delicate and Belle Epoque to us, but it was very much inspired by cast iron railings and metal fences and stuff like that.
Wow, so this would have been just as we were coming out of the Belle Epoque.
Yes, and we have these kind of garland-style tiaras and big stomachers and chokers. This was the sort of thing they were making for Grand Duchess Vladimir and the French aristocracy, or if you think about the Cartier Essex tiara and stuff they made for Edward VII's coronation. And then in around, I believe, 1913 was the official date. There was this really famous ballet russe in Paris, in which it was themed on the Arabian Nights, and it brought this orientalist, which is a bit of a loaded term nowadays, but it brought a big kind of trend into European high society because of the ornate costumes for that, and that became a huge trend that really inspired Cartier going on from that. Also, as we'll discuss in a bit, there were a couple of trips by Cartier to India, especially for the Delhi Durbar, and that marked a change in their clientele and also their designs and how they approach jewelry overall.
Yes, fascinating. Yes, yeah, so, you know, Cartier will, yeah, the Delhi Durbar, that does come through in a lot of their later designs.
Definitely, yeah. So let's move on to the next slide. So now we have an example of what's been going on. So these three pieces over here, so the most striking one is that beautiful coral bandeau, and that does date a bit later, but this is very much inspired by Persian kind of artifacts, and it fits into this kind of section of the exhibit because this was inspired by stuff that they found at the museums in Paris. This is before Cartier was traveling, but they looked at textiles, objects, there were vases, all sorts of kind of beautiful Islamic art objects dating hundreds of years old. And they created this one Cartier on the bottom right corner. This is a Cartier bandeau tiara from 1919. and the one beside it is a very angular Cartier New York tiara, which belonged to the heiress Doris Duke. And you can see them also in the video over here, the display and kind of some of the source material underneath it of the geometric patterns and things that this is before Cartier was traveling around. They just looked at stuff in Parisian museums like the Louvre and the Musée d'Orsay and the Musée des Beaux-Arts and got inspired by that to create these particular pieces of jewelry, which began this kind of new trend in Cartier.
Wonderful. And that pearl on the Doris Duke tiara, would that have been from the Middle East?
I believe so. So the tiara itself was made by Cartier in New York. So it was different from kind of the European stuff, but it definitely was the era of natural pearls. And most famously, the Cartier New York flagship store was bought in, I believe, sometime right after the First World War for an exchange of a pearl necklace. So it was one pearl necklace was worth the million or so dollars that it took to buy that massive mansion in New York. And they're still at it today, and it's probably worth hundreds of millions at this point.
Wow.
So pearls definitely have a role in Cartier New York jewelry at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think we can move on to the next slide. This was inspired by, this entire area was inspired by Cartier's travels to the Middle East and Persia and some of the objects of art that they created. So this is not a big flashy piece of jewelry, but they're kind of very unique examples of how well-traveled Cartier were. And creating these striking kind of rings and cigarette cases, clocks, lighters, pendants, kind of brooches and things. So, and you can really see, if you see the picture of the mosque there, and the use of the lapis lazuli, the turquoise, the emeralds, very kind of striking visual color combinations, which were not present in European jewelry at the time.
No, not at all. And a beautiful. And I can see at the bottom there, there's one of the mystery clocks.
Yes. And so if you think about kind of Fabergé stuff, that was all very enameled and it was beautiful in its own way, but it was very different from kind of this very bright visual. Fabergé was very pastel with gold and kind of Baroque style detailing and using gilding and stuff like that. But this one, very different in its kind of stark simplicity, but also the use of the different materials and colors. Yeah, so this was a very interesting kind of side section they had. And from there, we transition onto the next slide where you get to see. So this was the section inspired by Cartier's first visit to India in 1911 for the Delhi Durbar, as you mentioned before. And in the bottom left hand, you see this whole section of Indian jewelry that Cartier acquired during that visit. And they held a really big exhibit of that at the Cartier Paris flagship store in 1913, and versions of that exhibit were then taken to different Cartier stores in New York and London. And some of the most striking examples of that is on the upper left side. You see this very traditional kind of Indian necklace. It's called a Rani Har, and it's seed pearls set with multiple pendants. And this is very much kind of emblematic of Indian jewelry of the time and also to this day as well. Then you see on the bottom right hand is this necklace that Cartier created from two different Indian pieces and is sold to a client. And this is a Mughal pendant. And then they have a very kind of, that probably dates around 300 to 400 years old. And then the necklace itself was probably only 200 years old. So they combine that together to create this very striking necklace. And this kind of marks a transition into Cartier's using Indian stones, which we'll touch on later, but the emerald brooch on top is very much one of those things that they created for that New York exhibit in 1913 using carved Indian emeralds and things like that. And the kind of most prominent jewel that came out of this collaboration with the Maharajas, as you can see in the video, and also that big spectacular tiger's eye turban ornament, which was created for the Maharaja of Navanagar. And the Navanagars were a state in Gujarat, and they're currently very much in the media because Jamnagar, the capital of their princely state, is where the big Ambani wedding is happening right now.
Wow. And do you think the Ambanis have any of those treasures?
Not these ones, but they certainly have acquired bunch of kind of Cartier jewels, and we've seen Mrs. Ambani wear a couple of the ones that were sold at the Maharajas and Mughal Magnificence sale a couple of years ago, and a lot of the jewels in this exhibit were a part of that sale in 2019. So they're definitely very much involved in this world. I believe this belongs to Cartier now, so likely won't get sold again. But a bunch of the other kind of Mughal stones we had in that sale have ended up with the Ambanis.
Wonderful. And I must say that necklace on the left-hand side is very similar to one owned by the Gloucesters, isn't it? The pearls and the emerald
Yes.
ones.
So yeah, it's very much that kind of Indian multiple layered necklace. It basically you wear a bunch of chokers and things, and then this is like a longer necklace you wear in front of that, and just covers the front of your bodice. Especially at a time when ladies wore veils, it kind of showed underneath the veils, and you can tell they were all bejeweled up.
Wonderful.
So it's still worn for bride on for weddings and stuff. And my grandma has one. She hasn't worn it for a couple of years, but it is one of those like very traditional pieces of jewelry, and it's very interesting that Cartier has kind of managed to preserve the essence of that in quite a lot of their jewels, even though the purpose is very much removed from what it was originally. So this is very much an example of kind of the carved Indian gemstones that Cartier encountered during that trip to India in 1911, and that influence Cartier jewelry so much for the next coming decades. We have an example of these beautiful carved emeralds, and the most kind of spectacular piece is that massive soutar from 1925, which was, I believe, bought by some American heiress. And on the other side, you have the iconic Tutti Frutti jewels, which are really quite spectacular. And what makes them so unique is the use of different colors of carved gemstones to create these patterns that are really, I think, become an iconic thing about Cartier in the 1920s and 30s, and they're extremely valuable today.
They are, and I hate to say it, but I don't like Tutti Frutti. I never have. I mean, maybe I'm betraying my craft, but I've never been a fan. I understand the historical, importance and significance, and my God, the skill it must take to carve gemstones. For people who are not aware, emeralds are very porous and they crack very easily. So to even carve anything into a stone takes just like an immense level of craftsmanship that very few people in this day and age possess. I just don't happen to be a fan of it. Saying that, if anyone wanted to buy me one, I wouldn't turn my nose up at it.
No, I think they're definitely an acquired taste. I know for one, my mother did not just be a fan, and then she attended the previous Cartier exhibition with me, and I kept on telling her about Tutti Frutti jewels, and she kind of just hated it from the name. Even she's like,
It's not
yeah,
the
it
most
reminds her of like
evocative.
a ice cream in the 70s and 80s that they used to have. So yeah, she was like, I'm not a fan. But then she saw them, she's like, in real life they're breathtaking. So I think it's definitely one of those things that are very much an acquired taste, and that's kind of the thing with most collector's items is you have to find the right market for it. Yeah, so definitely kind of interesting examples and very iconic Cartier style, and interesting to kind of know how they developed as a whole symbol of Cartier. Where we have the main gallery, and now this is the space that I had basically gone for. So I'm seeing this. There were kind of cutouts between each of these, the previous galleries to get into this main bit. But I mean, I've been kind of saving the best for last. So I saw all the other things first and then decided to come and really focus my attention on this one. So you can see from here, it was divided into the tiaras and big necklaces and the display cases on top. And then underneath, you had a bunch of the smaller jewels and objects to art, just kind of set out with a lot of the source material that Cartier had used, a bunch of the sketches they had, and it showed very comprehensive picture of how these jewels are created, and they were divided in different eras and different kind of influences of how they were influenced by this pattern into creating these specific pieces of jewelry. So it was a very kind of comprehensive take and very well done, I must say. To have this approach in creating this exhibit. I mean, as an art history major, this was kind of my nerding out moment, but I really appreciate.
One of the things I absolutely adore is ledgers, is jewelry ledgers, and especially old ones. And Cartier have a fantastic archive that I'm desperate to get into. But there's is something very special about sort of a handwritten, and they used to paint, you know, hand paint the designs into the ledger, what they were going to do, and then they measure all the stones, and yeah, and then you know you get the concepts of all these different designs before you get the final piece, and it's all done by hand, and it's so exquisite. I love it.
Oh yeah, no, just spectacular. And I think we move on to the first bit. So now I had flown all the way to Abu Dhabi just to see this tiara, essentially, and I must say that it's really was one of the most spectacular jewels I've ever seen. It was smaller than I expected in real life, because it does look absolutely massive when the Duchess of Gloucester wears it. But it was this like solid wall of diamonds, and the workmanship was so exquisite that you can see in this video how it catches light and just sparkles. But I was stood in front of them and send you guys a picture, and it was just kind of a brilliant way, and it really lived up to its expectations.
Wonderful. So it's, so what I can see there, it's sapphires, diamonds, pearls, anything else?
Yes. Yes, all set in platinum. And
wow,
this
that's
is
quite a ton.
Yeah, it must. Because all the TRs, this one did definitely look the heaviest. And I think it's because it is a very solid wall of diamonds. But the kind of the Indian inspiration you can really tell with the lotus and the arches and the general feel of it. Because this is when I was talking about earlier versions of this exhibition. So they had this in Paris in early 2022. And then at the Dallas version, which I did also fly to Dallas just to see the exhibit and maybe just to see this tiara, but sadly that was not there. So the moment I learned that it was in Abu Dhabi, I had to go for this. And I'm so glad I did, because it definitely, if they had this at that Sotheby's exhibition, you and I went to, Sam,
I was
I think this would
literally
have been
about to
one
say
of
that. I was just like, did we see its twin?
No, it was
Or a
at,
lesser version.
No, because that at that time it was in Paris, so that's why it wasn't there. So,
okay, but did we see something similar? I want to say like the Derby tiara. Do you know the one
no.
I'm thinking of?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying.
Nah,
But
I can't remember.
This was like the craftsmanship on this one. You can really tell the difference between French and British design, or Cartier and like British jewelers, like Ashbury and stuff. The craftsmanship. Like,
It pains
Can,
me. It pains
yeah.
me as a British person, but the French are so good. They're
We have,
so good.
And that's a bit of a nerdy thing to say, but no, that you can like tell the difference when you look at the jewels beside each other. Like, it's just next level.
Yeah.
So no, it was absolutely exquisite, and I think definitely the highlight of the entire exhibition for me.
Wonderful. And who did this? So who is its original owner?
So its original owner was apparently the Countess of Grenard. In 1923, she had this made by Cartier. And then around 1937, it was somehow acquired by Princess Marie Louise, who was a granddaughter of Queen Victoria. And she had the tiara altered a bit by Cartier at the time. I believe they removed some bits off top, and that's what they had a bit about in the catalog. And I know, obviously, I'll probably link the article on this tiara as well underneath. And then her godson was the current Duke of Gloucester, so she left him the tiara. His mother never wore it, but when he got married to Brigitte, she started wearing it, and she's been the main wearer of the tiara now for the past 50 years.
Wonderful.
And she does wear it very well, I must say. It was last worn in 2022 for the South African state banquet at Buckingham Palace. But I mean, she's rarely photographed wearing this tiara, because she never really wears it for the Guildhall banquets they always attend. So seeing it in person gave us me a much better opportunity to appreciate really how beautiful it is.
Yeah.
But definitely looks heavy, and there's no wonder she isn't wearing that often. So let's move on to the next bit. So this is, we're going to go through all of the jewels here on this part of the exhibit. So there was a necklace owned by the Monaco Royal family. There's beautiful turquoise bandeau from 1936, which is very much like an Astor tiara. There's a diamond bandeau back there, which looks like something the Sultan of Brunei's third wife used to have. And then there are a bunch of these beautiful, small, slim diamond bandeaus. And you can really see why they were called bandeaus rather than tiaras, because there's really not much structure to them. So you would have to wear them on the forehead. And that serpent necklace. And then you see objects are like these cigarette cases, and then the objects, especially this beautiful clock that Cartier were inspired by and their design. So overall, they really try to do a comprehensive kind of look between not just the jewels, but also the source material and how that inspired Cartier, like this wave tiara, a stomacher we'll see a bit later, and then this beautiful loop tiara, which dates from 1902. And it was very much like the Vladimir tiara or those sorts of loop tiaras, but nicer. And then this steel kakushnik, which is made for the coronation of Queen Maria of Romania. There's the Gloucester India tiara again, right at the entrance of the exhibit. And then we had all of these designs. And again, you're talking about those beautiful handmade paintings and things that they did. So beautiful. And then we end with this spectacular emerald and diamond necklace, which was made for the Marchioness of Bute in 1932. And you have a picture of her wearing it down there. But you can really see on the sides some of the most beautiful examples from this exhibit and how they were displayed. I think the turquoise tiara is one of my favorites. And Lady Astor, who was the UK's first female MP, she had one that was very similar, like, I'll be having an article on that in May. But the other jewels are very much examples of Cartier transitioning, but also using kind of these principles and these design ideas to create such exquisite pieces of jewelry.
Wonderful. And that turquoise tiara is very unusual. That looks like the something out of Bhutan.
It does very much. The kind of year of 1936 is very unique, because it was right before the coronation, and we'll see some kind of coronation related examples. But it's very, the carved turquoise is such a standout feature that it's very unlike anything we've really seen in a lot of jewelry before. But it's very striking, and I'm sure it's probably less valuable than the all diamond things, but the craftsmanship is just incredible.
Yes, no, that carving is spectacular.
Yeah, and then that emerald necklace, though, nothing beats that.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I mean, not that I know much about the financials of the Marchioness of Brute, but something that large for a member of the aristocracy.
I believe that that marchioness, her mother was an American heiress.
Of course, that
So
explains it.
someone from the, I believe, Ogden Mills family. So yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of money there. And then they have been in financial trouble a bit recently. They had to have to sell Dumfries House to King Charles. So that's how it probably ended back up at Cartier. And this was one of the pieces I saw back in Dallas as well. But I think this is definitely something that I was excited to see, because our friend Beth, she's the one who discovered that it was made by the for the Marchioness of Bute. And I'd seen that image and I had it in my file for a couple of years, but I never made the connection that she was wearing this necklace, because I always thought in a black and white it looked like a sapphire. But no, it was just lovely to see it again now, knowing the provenance of the whole thing. And we have here the Duchess of Windsor's big amethyst necklace, which was made by Cartier in 1947. And this is another piece I'd seen before. And I must say, against all the tiaras and things, both times I've kind of tended to overlook it, even though they have devoted kind of a special whole gallery to this necklace. But it's beautiful and striking, but doesn't necessarily live up to the other jewels.
No, well, it's funny you should make this should feature because her engagement ring, her infamous emerald engagement ring, did come from Cartier, and the emerald he would have bought in 1936 from a salesman in Baghdad. So I wonder if he picked it up when he was first starting his travels into the Islamic world for his jewels. But this being from 1947 makes sense because this would have been after World War II, and not to get into the details of it, but their finances would have been changed, altered, shall we say. So
Yes.
to use semi, not that amethysts aren't lovely or turquoise, but compared to the rubies of, the 1930s and the emeralds, this is sort of second tier jewels
Yeah, and you
for.
can see a transition in Cartier, because at this time, the three Cartier brothers, they were all passing away, and kind of their stake in the shop was diminishing, and kind of their weren't as personally responsible for the designs, and you can see that transition again with the kind of lack of material resources as well. You can really see this as a marked example in contrast to kind of the other jewels that are on display.
Sort of a passage of time in gemstones.
Yeah, so I'm interested you mentioned the engagement ring because I'm not sure if you've read a magnificent kind of Cartier book written by Francesca Cartier, who's the granddaughter of one of the Cartier brothers.
Of
And
course.
they detail, I believe there's a whole section on that about the engagement ring and how that was acquired. So
In
it
Baghdad,
was
it was the
in Baghdad,
size of
yeah.
a pigeon egg.
And I mean, the Middle East has always been the best place for gem hunting. So,
Still is today. Still is today.
yeah. So, like with this exhibition in Abu Dhabi. No, it's just lovely. And then let's move on to the next bit where we see. So, in this section, this is the opposite side of the gallery, and we have these beautiful jewels. There's this stunning cushionic tiara, a beautiful clock back there. You see Grace Kelly's necklace again. And then you get a look at the cushionic tiara is beautiful, the aigrette's nice. And then on the upper right-hand side, you have these two tiaras, one in aquamarine, one topaz, created for the 1937 coronation. But they're all kind of pale in comparison to that stunning rock crystal tiara that was created in 1912 for Russian Baron. And it is just magnificent. And I mean, there's a video of it later on, but it was definitely one of the highlights of this whole kind of all these exhibitions for me.
Yeah, there's one tiara I wish I could see. And it wasn't by Cartier, sorry, but it was by Chomet, the Yusupov bridal tiara.
That was Cartier,
Oh, it
actually.
was Cartier. Well, shut my mouth, sorry.
Rest of her jewels are filming, but that was Cartier.
That was Cartier, but it was just, the way they described it was rock, crystal, and diamond, and I was like, oh, what must that look like?
Oh. And this is just like, look at how exquisite that must be, because we don't really can see the carvings on that in black and white photos, but this is just exquisite. So we have here, you can really get a glimpse of the beautiful rock crystal details on there. And it's amazing to me that A, not only was this such a beautiful piece made, but the fact this managed to make it out of Russia during the revolution, and the rock crystal, which is quite delicate, managed to kind of survive that perilous journey and is still beautiful today.
Yeah, those carvings are almost Celtic.
Yeah, it's a very kind of, again, if you understand the time that with that Ballet Russe and the visits to India, and that's what they were very much trying to emphasize, that they looked at these calligraphic carvings, and I believe there was a stone beside one of them that was of the great mosque at Cordoba,
Oh,
and
okay.
it was very much inspired by that sort of carvings and stuff like that. So there was very much an architectural influence on the jewelry at the time. And then on the right side here, we have this stunning bazooband, which is like an armlet created for one of the Indian Maharajas. And like you see at the back, the what's happening to the Duchess of Windsor's necklace, where they were showing kind of a visual representation of all the jewels being put in. There was a similar thing done to this and this piece in the previous exhibition. And again, it's just like a marvel of how it's different compositions and put into this very kind of striking piece to be worn on an arm.
Do you know what? If you hadn't said armlet, I would have thought that was a really, really big necklace. I was like,
Yeah.
oh, okay.
But no, and I was thinking about it, like if your arm size changes from wear to wear, then it's kind of useless because it has a very like solid stone clasp, so there's kind of no room movement.
There's a thing you can do in jewelry, which I won't go into and bore people, but yeah, you wouldn't do that
Yeah.
to this piece.
Not for and this is for men's jewelry, so
Yeah.
yeah, so I think we move on to the next bit. So here we can take a look at the beautiful tiaras made for the 1937 coronation on the left hand side there. And I think the use of semi-precious stones is again quite a different kind of way. I don't remember the exact number, but they said they're like a couple dozen tiaras created for that coronation.
Yeah, quite the
And these are just
contrast from
two well-known, yeah.
From the Edwardian into the what would have been the Art Deco period at the time.
Exactly. And when you think about this, the same time the Cartier India tiara was kind of altered for Princess Marie Louise. So very different kind of types of jewelry they're dealing with.
Saying that, that would have been after sort of the Great Depression and the First World War, so perhaps the materials weren't available, the fabulous fortunes hadn't been built back up yet, but still very striking.
Very striking, indefinitely. Yeah. So, and then on the other side, you can just get a glimpse back of what's happening in the loop again in a bit. But we had lots of objects art, and then there's a stunning brooch that belonged to the Monaco princely family back there. And then these stunning Art Deco clip brooches, which when you think of Cartier in the 20s and 30s, that's what you really think about. And they had a
Yes.
couple of very striking examples with carved gemstones. There's a stunning clock, which is a cigarette box with a clock, actually, and then a couple of cigarette cases beside it, all inspired by these manuscripts and folios and all these stunning objects. And I've been the only one reporting widely, I must say, because there's a bit of a queue right here. And there was things like lighters and matchboxes and stuff that I think one of the most interesting Cartier principles, and I remember reading that from Francesca Cartier's book, was how every customer, even like the mundane things, were made special. And you could really see that even if you weren't going to buy a tiara, you could buy a little lighter from there, and it would be done with like the best craftsmanship. So you would get a piece of Cartier that lives on forever.
I won't go into my rant about the current state of Cartier and the jewelry standards across the whole industry, but that is a wonderful, wonderful statement. If you
Yeah,
follow me
no.
on Instagram, you know my feelings.
Yes, I think I've seen your stuff on Tiffany the other day. Very entertaining. So yeah, I think we move on to the next bit. And here is again an example of your detested Tutti Frutti jewels. But this one belonged to Daisy Fellows, who's a famous socialite during the war. And this has been worn also by Princess Caroline of Monaco.
Wow.
So it's a stunning piece. It used to originally have a silk clasp at the back, like the other Indian jewels we saw a bit previously. But then in the 1960s, Daisy Fellows' daughter, who was a Spanish countess, decided to have these two stunning sapphires mounted as a clasp, and it's been like this ever since. But this is very much, I think, the most iconic of the Tutti Frutti pieces. And in real life, the lighting of these pictures do not do it justice. It was quite spectacular the way the stones, and you can really see the almost kind of wild quality of the stones, the fact that it's very natural and it's not kind of trimmed or set and very kind of refined as Cardi is, but kind of left very wildly there. And that's what I really just, it resonated with me, even though I'm such a big fan of kind of the more classic styles. This is really stood out for that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful piece.
Then beside it, you had a bunch of the Indian jewels. Excuse me. And then on and there you had jewels from the 1950s and 60s, which I must say were so unremarkable. And again, mark into the Cartier that we know nowadays that they were not worth even photographing because it was all very triangular and the stones were fine, but the craftsmanship and the quality and the attention to detail was just gone. And you could really see that from basically any jewel decorated from the 1950s onwards because the materials and the designs just aren't the same anymore. And that's when the family had already kind of sold up and departed. So, and then we get to the final bit of the exhibit, which was the contemporary jewels created by Cartier, which were not only kind of inspired by the Indian and the Islamic influences, but also created for Middle Eastern clients, like this spectacular diamond necklace you see on the bottom left, which was created for a Qatari sheikha, I believe one of the daughters of Sheikha Moza, and it was absolutely beautiful. The size of the diamonds was just jaw-dropping.
Oh, that's a very nice yellow from what I can see.
Yeah, no doubt cost a couple of millions, but we
Just a
have that.
couple.
Yeah, and then we have this striking necklace in the middle there, which I really like the display type where you could really see how flexible it was and the way it kind of went up and down. But the diamonds, not the largest, but the craftsmanship was really lovely for a
Wonderful.
modern jewel, I must say.
Although the bottom bit's a little bit bent, sorry, just putting that out.
Yeah. I mean, that's what movements does to it. So, And then you had on the bottom right side, you had a modern interpretation of Tutti Frutti. And this was, I believe, created around 2009.
Wow.
So again, I kind of get so compared to the Daisy Fellows necklace, this just didn't really compare, even though the lighting was much better for this one. But yeah, this one just kind of looked, it didn't have the same level of craftsmanship, even though
Yeah.
that emerald was massive.
I must say it's quite impressive for them to have that many rubies, just because I mean there's a bit of an embargo at the moment on rubies going around the world, but that's an impressive number.
Yeah, you know, the Middle Eastern royals get what
Oh
they
yeah, they
want.
probably had, yeah, they probably went into the cave and got some out.
Then on top of that, we have this spectacular tiara, which I think is probably my favorite modern jewel ever commissioned. And it has this spectacular carved emerald that Cartier has had in their archives for over a century at this point. They had it in a stomacher in the 1920s and then somehow never sold, and they just kept it there and they put it into this really striking kind of wave pattern tiara around 2012. And it's one of the most beautiful modern jewels that I think has been created in the past couple of decades.
And was it bought by anyone, or is it just owned by Cartier and
It's
displayed?
just part of the Cartier collection.
Oh,
So,
okay.
and so sadly, probably won't be worn by anyone unless maybe the Romanovs want to give it a try.
Or our nice friend in Malaysia. Maybe she's, needs
Yeah.
a new one.
Yeah, she will be getting more family members, so I suggest it. But that's just maybe a bit too out of budget for that.
Yeah.
And then on the opposite side, we have this very striking modern pierrot created by Cartier around 2009. Again, for a private client, but I would suspect it's Middle Eastern. I love the, so if you remember the emerald necklace we just saw, so it was very much a similar kind of pattern in the necklace, but done in a very beautiful kind of modern style. The tiara, very small and delicate, but also the craftsmanship. This kind of reminded us of the Cartier Art Deco style of the 20s and 30s, and the necklace and the whole pattern. It was quite nice to see that pearls are still being made and being done in a modern way to that kind of level of detail that they used to back then. But and what do you think kind of about the modern jewels compared to what we just saw?
Well, as we all know by now, I what I prize most of all is craftsmanship. And being in the jewelry trade as long as I have, you can see when a piece is handmade and you can see when a piece has been put together by machine. Now, I'm not saying that Cartier does put their stuff together by machine, but I'm just saying some things, given modern technology, given certain, what's the best way to say it, culture that's pervaded the jewelry industry, a lot of cost-cutting measures have been put in to increase price profit margins. So a lot of pieces are now used with what we call CAD/CAM, which is computer-aided design and computer-aided manufacture. And you can tell, and it's not a bad thing to use it, but when it comes to jewelry of this quality, what you would call high jewelry, you can tell instantly when something's been made by a machine as opposed to something that's been made by a master craftsman who's learned their craft over many years. So that's my personal opinion. It doesn't mean they're any less stunning. It's just my personal preference is for the old styles. I like it. I like the idea of a trained jeweler sitting down and crafting a beautiful piece that will last forever, from his, with his bare hands.
Definitely. I think that's where you really get even the imperfections. You can tell that human touch is there, where with machine jewelry, it's loses that kind of that unique quality of it and just kind of becomes very generic.
Yeah. And but again, if anyone wants to buy me something like the one on the left-hand side, I'm not gonna say
I reckon those diamonds themselves individually must be quite
Oh,
valuable.
must be.
Yeah, no, it's just exquisite to see all of this. And then let's, I think, move on to the last slide when we have the opportunity to kind of reflect on what you just saw. So, Sam, I mean, I have seen all of this in real life now, but from seeing all this, what do you think was kind of the most standout piece of the way do you think that they put together this exhibition?
I mean, I think it's very interesting. especially, you know, me and you, we love our tiaras, and we don't really think about, or we don't, well, it's maybe a less studied area of tiara history post World War One. You know, you think of sort of the grand age of the tiara would have been sort of around the end of the 19th century up until the First World War. But, you know, times change and fashions change and wealth moves in different directions. So designs move with it. And it's just, you know, it is a wonderful way to see how, you know, Cartier looked at where his next, you know, where his market was going after the World War and just went, right, I will have to adapt to these new clientele. And actually, you know, I will can incorporate centuries, millennium old jewelry traditions into these new pieces.
Yeah, so that was, I think, something that made Cartier very unique in that era, especially is first when they used to use kind of the industrial things like the railings and the fences to create the Belle Epoque jewelry, and then afterwards to create this sort of beautiful kind of Orientalist jewelry inspired by architecture and native jewelry, but kind of more from architectural elements and objects, art, and historical pieces to create such kind of spectacular contemporary creations.
Yeah, and I mean, I'd like to say I'd hope to see something similar in the future, but you know.
We can hope.
We can
But
hope.
definitely, I think if this is just a magnificent kind of way that we get to see so much of Cartier's hidden collection and the fact that we got loans from the Monaco princely family, the Dukiness of Gloucester, the Aga Khan, a couple of the Middle Eastern royal families. And there is no kind of future for this exhibit now. Once it ends in Abu Dhabi, we can hope that it'll kind of another iteration will pop up somewhere else, and hopefully we'll be able to go and cover it then too.
Yeah, it is interesting. I, you know, especially post-COVID, I do hope the, you know, these exhibitions continue, and become more accessible to everyone around the world. So yeah, Cartier, maybe, and everyone else, open up those archives.
Yes, and we would love to give it an exclusive preview next time.
Yeah, you know, if anyone's listening, like, you
Yes, anyone from Cartier.
know, yeah, intent, intent.
Perfect. So thanks, Sam, for joining me today, and I hope you like to look into this exhibit.
Lovely.